The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Despite more than a century of prohibition and drug war, the use and production of banned, unregulated drugs, including a constantly growing number of new synthetic drugs, is on the rise around the world. That's according to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime in its 2024 World Drug Report, which was released on June 26th. We'll hear more about that on today's show. But first, the UN Human Rights Council is holding its 56th session in Geneva, Switzerland from June 18th through July 12th. The UN's Special Rapporteur on the Right of Everyone to the Enjoyment of the Highest Attainable Standard of Physical and Mental Health, Dr. Tlaleng Mofokeng, addressed the Council on June 24th.
Mr. President, distinguished delegates, civil society representatives, it is a great honor for me to present my fourth thematic report to the Human Rights Council, which focuses on drug use, harm reduction, and the right to health. I thank all stakeholders for the contributions received. Last year, I undertook two country visits to Luxembourg and to Costa Rica. My intervention will also focus on these visits. Mr. President, while the hour is already late, with nothing else left to say or to do with the mandate given to me by this council, I share in the collective rage and fury as we watch day after day horrific genocidal acts unfold and documented in real time. And in this moment, I bear witness to many people around the world who too, under the crushing weight of imperialism and colonial oppression, know neither peace nor respite. I remain optimistic that world leaders will summon all of the necessary political and diplomatic force to bring an end to all wars around the world and an urgent ceasefire so desperately needed. Mr. President, drugs have been part of human history for thousands of years, whether for medical healing, religious and cultural ceremonies, or as commodities for pleasure. It is crucial to distinguish drug use and drug use disorders. Drug use is not a medical condition. The majority of people who use drugs do not have dependency and do not require treatment. Drug use disorders, including drug dependency, are a medical condition, thus requiring appropriate support and treatment from a right to health perspective. Together, the social, political, commercial, and legal determinants of health can create and reinforce health disparities. With that in mind, I focus on how the availability, accessibility, acceptability, and quality of care is affected by punitive approaches. I explored in this report how drug control compounds and disproportionately affects certain rights and individuals. We must examine the underlying power structures that perpetuate these systems of disadvantage that have outlived colonialism but continue to shape the underlying dynamics of both drug use and how states respond to it. The intersection of criminal law, health, and human rights is multifaceted. The failure to adopt a human rights-based approach to addressing drug use has had a negative impact, especially on those in situations of homelessness or poverty, people with mental health conditions, sex workers, women, children, LGBTQA+ persons, Black people, Indigenous peoples, migrants, persons who are incarcerated or detained, persons with disabilities, those living with HIV, and people living in rural areas. Criminalization is but a single and extreme option within a regulatory spectrum. Regulatory frameworks needed to be cohesively developed by states in a way that is dependent on scientific evidence and considered powered asymmetries and without undue influence from corporations. Mr. President, women who use drugs are also subject to higher rates of violence. Thus, integration of harm reduction services with those for gender-based violence and sexual and reproductive health is required. About 1 in 10 new HIV infections result from drug use by injection. Yet over 92 countries have criminal laws relating to HIV. I urge all states to adhere to human rights principles when negotiating the resolution on human rights in the context of HIV and AIDS. For both conflict and non-conflict emergency situations, access to controlled medicines is a key element to the right to health, including anesthesia during medical procedures and for the management of various health conditions in this context of harm reduction. My upcoming report to the General Assembly in October 2024 will delve deeper into the themes of sustainable peace and security and sustainable development. All people rely on essential controlled medicines for pain management, for opioid dependence treatment, for palliative care and other health conditions at some point in their life. Given the discriminatory perceptions of pain and who deserves pain relief, this leads to a failure to ensure access to essential medicines for pain relief and drug use disorders, and threatens the realization of the right to health and to the freedom from cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment. Although not in this present report, I will also pay attention to the current developments and advise on these trends of using the courts in spheres of medicine other than those related to drug use. For example, those seeking to restrict medicines for the management of medical abortions, causing harm to the practice of medicine by unfairly restricting essential medicines contrary to WHO evidence-based guidelines and essential drug lists. Mr. President and distinguished delegates, harm reduction includes a wide range of policies and programs and practices that are aimed at minimizing negative health, social, and legal impacts associated with drug use and drug laws and policies. They work best when they are tailored to the intersecting needs of individuals and the communities aimed to serve them. Some practical harm reduction measures that numerous states have already begun implementing include needle and syringe programs, opioid agonist therapy, drug consumption rooms and supervised injection facilities, drug checking, overdose and prevention and reversal, housing, employment and education, and sustainable funding for programs. And I will take an opportunity later during this dialogue to explain in more details these concepts. Harm reduction measures also focus on the removal of criminal penalties for drug offenses, including for but not limited to use or possession, and is a way of reducing the negative impacts of punitive drug policies on the right to health in particular. I support the full decriminalization of drug use, and evidence from jurisdictions that have taken a decriminalization approach demonstrate that adopting less punitive policies does not result in an increase in drug use or drug-related harms or other crimes. The end on the war on drugs, as this is a war on people, is necessary. I urge all states to be centered on dignity, public health, and human rights. Harm reduction is an approach which will improve trust and dialogue, creativity, and innovation in this urgent moment of a paradigm shift that is needed.
That was Dr. Tlaleng Mofokeng, UN Special Rapporteur on the right of everyone to the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health, addressing the UN Human Rights Council at its 56th session in Geneva, Switzerland on June 24th. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Staying with the UN, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the UN Office on Drugs and Crime released its 2024 World Drug Report on June 26th. Let's hear first from Dr. Angela May, Chief of the Research and Trend Analysis Branch at UNODC.
I'll start by, you know, we have done five in-depth analyses. The first one is on the impact of the drop of Afghan opium production. So if one of your country is pictured there in pink, it means that this analysis is most interesting, because it's basically there in pink are the countries that are supplied by Afghan opiates. So the drastic shortage definitely will be impacted. So far, we don't see much of a shortage in destination countries, mainly Western and Central Europe, but we start seeing, for example, a drastic decline in seizure on the way, particularly, you know, right after Afghanistan. So this is like the shortage is coming if the drop continues. And so what are the impact? And so what you will find there is an analysis of the impact inside Afghanistan, particularly for farmers. So who is getting richer and who is getting poor in Afghanistan? But also an analysis of, contrasting. You see there these two contrasting lines between the decrease of heroin seizure in the Afghan outside of Afghanistan and actually the increase of methamphetamine. And so we analyze how, in the ban, there is a clear impact of the ban, drug ban in Afghanistan in opium is less clear of the impact of the ban on methamphetamine. But what we also analyze is really the threat in destination market of new substances and possibly more potent. Ms. Wally mentioned the nitazenes, and indeed that's an analysis that we see because in some destination countries in Western and Central Europe, the nitazenes have started killing people. And so it's important to really keep and monitor it. The other analysis, in-depth analysis that we have done is on the Golden Triangle. I don't know if you remember, last year we looked at the Amazon, and the Golden Triangle is another example where really organized crime is taking control of these three border areas. As I said, here in the Golden Triangle, we had the Amazon, but in Latin America, there are others of these three border areas. And here we really have done an analysis. And what is important that you focus on the infograph there, basically, seeing how drug supply is really interrelated to the conflict and how drug trafficking groups are really cooperating with armed groups around particularly Myanmar. And so how all of this, the conflict, in a way, affect the drug supply, the drug trafficking production, and vice versa, the drug, affect also the conflict dynamic. But also, is the drug trafficking groups that then now are expanding into different forms of crimes, particularly online scamming. The Golden Triangle has become really a center of where there is, in geographical area, where there is very weak control of government and rule of law. But also environmental, the impact on the environment. Just to give you an example, we estimated that between 2,000 to almost 4,000 metric tons of waste from the methamphetamine production is dumped every year, more or less, in the Golden Triangle. So it's a huge chemical waste that is just dumped, and so the impact also on all the environmental, soil, air, water, etc. Just to say on the maps, to show you, first of all, the beautiful maps we have, our geospatial information experts are really done a great work to see, to show, and you will find a lot in the report, on how to show the geographical convergence of all of this problem together. And that's why you will see in one of the recommendations that we have is that we say if we really wanted to address the drug supply, we really need to think about addressing organized crime more holistically. So drug supply alone, without thinking how organized crime operates, will not be sustainable. The other in-depth analysis that we have done is synthetic drugs and gender. So we kind of, you will find still some analysis on, synthetic drugs, why are becoming a threat, they are easy because they are easy to produce, cheap, easy to take. That's one of the things that you will find particularly also here, to see also how for women, in a way, it's using synthetic drugs is less stereotypized than, for example, plant-based, because it's just a pill, or it's just, give them an impression that it's not, something that should be stigmatized. So, but what is interesting, what we have learned in doing this analysis is that clearly there are more men than women using drugs, and also more men than women using synthetic drugs. But once a woman start to enter being either use synthetic drugs or traffic synthetic drugs has a much more harmful impact. So in both on health, but also when they enter the criminal justice system. And the other thing that we have learned is that the percentage of women that both are using synthetic drugs and are involved in trafficking is much higher than as compared for plant-based. So in a way, women are more involved as compared to plant-based in synthetics than in plant-based drugs. The other in-depth analysis that we have is again to look at to continue to look at the policy changes and the impact. So you will see an analysis of cannabis legalization, the impact. So the two graphs that you see there is relating to the United States and there is nothing new in a way on what we have said before. What we do, what we have done this year, is to update the numbers. But what is, it looks like, again, is consolidating the conclusion that the cannabis legalization, where there is data, because we have to say it's not that the data is available everywhere, has accelerated drug use, and particularly in harmful use, as is seen in more hospitalization. I mean, Ms. Wally was mentioning it, and in other parameters. There is definitely, on the other side, less people entering the criminal justice system, clearly, less arrest, and the illegal market is shrinking. In some areas where this cannabis has been legalized more than in others, but for example, for the arrest, we still have clearly the racial disparities that were also there before the legalization. Another area that we look, and that really, I guess, would be, again, a message as, you know, in terms of knowledge and evidence that we can bring to the Commission, is also to think about what is happening for in the area of psychedelics. Psychedelics are substances that are controlled by the Convention. But there is really, cultural movements that are emerging, particularly in West countries, but also in Latin America, about the idea that the use of psychedelics is linked to well-being and, to medical use. And in fact, there is ongoing research that shows that promising research, not finalizing yet, that shows that indeed psychedelics may be, helpful to cure particularly some mental health disorders. But in a stage where research is not final yet, is again going and expanding at rapid pace, actually a culture and the perception that these psychedelics are just good, just for the well-being in general. And so and this will pose a challenge on how, again, to keep that equilibrium that the Convention talks about between medical use and non-medical use. The other, another analysis that we have done is that the chapter on the right to health in the context of drug use, and basically what we have done here is to look at the dimensions of the right to health into and how we can translate those dimensions based on a convent, so it's a treaty, an international treaty ratified by almost all countries. So based on that, so nothing that we have created that has not been already agreed by member states, and just to say, okay, what does it mean in terms of drug use? And not only thinking about people who use drugs, but also people that are around people who use drugs, particularly the children, the family of those that use drugs. So just to conclude, I wanted also to give you maybe important message, three important messages that are based on not on this in-depth analysis, but on the old data that I'll tell you later where you can find it. One is the cocaine market that is still booming. And you see here the increase on production, you see on the right the increase on use, global use, and you see there the trafficking that continue to affect different regions of the world. What I think we have on cocaine now is really that vicious cycle, that there is more supply calling for more demand calling for more supply, and so there's just one calling from each other, and so we keep seeing the market expanding, and particularly expanding also in non-traditional markets, and particularly, for example, in an expansion of the trafficking through West Africa, where also is becoming harmful, because now we see people entering treatment for cocaine use disorders in Africa.
That was Angela May, chief of the Research and Trend Analysis Branch at UNODC. She was speaking at an event marking the release of UNODC's 2024 World Drug Report. The event, entitled Evidence to Impact, Powering Effective Drug Policies with Data Collection and Research, was held June 26th by the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. Let's hear responses from a couple of the national delegations at the CND. First, here's Colombian Ambassador Laura Gil.
Mr. Chair, Excellencies and colleagues, distinguished panelists, my delegation has taken note of the report with no major surprises. Year after year, The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime gathers us here to present a report on failure, the total, visible, and undeniable failure of the international drug regime, without offering a single proposal to aid members to overcome it. In spite of efforts and shared commitments, the global demand and supply are steadily growing. The most vulnerable are the most affected. The successes of some countries are the failures of others. Women are affected by drugs in a differentiated manner, and there are clear gender gaps. Access to health services is limited and surrounded by stigma. The drug economy is increasingly posing significant threats to local ecosystems and communities and negatively affecting fragile environments. But that is not all. Silences speak as much as words, and here in this document, they resound as loud as screams, and in the chapter of the right to health, they may actually cost lives. And let me summarize three major absences in the report presented to us. One, the lack of a human rights-based approach. Human rights are no more than a salute to the flag in the text. For instance, the sections dedicated to the 95% rate of eradication in Afghanistan fail to describe the human cost of a drug ban imposed by a brutal regime that does not even have access to this room we sit in today. The lack of courage to call things by their names. In the chapter on drug use and the right to health, the term harm reduction is not used even once. UNODC leadership may not like it, but it has been adopted in a CND resolution, and it is recognized as a needed critical approach to drug use in the context of the right to health by a majority of the membership. The same chapter fails to question the punitive paradigm by omitting and leaving aside that criminalization and punishment for drug use drives a stigma, discrimination and violence, and undermines the right to health. And finally, the lack of an integrated and coherent UN system. UNODC writes as if we were alone in the world without references to major findings and recommendations of other UN agencies and programs. In the end, the world continues at a peak of consumption, production, and trafficking. We need pragmatic and achievable responses to these challenges. We are here to work for human beings in the flesh and bone. It's about the people, about the people. Our final objective is to save lives. And UNODC has little or nothing to say about it. And then I submit to the following to the CND membership. Either we continue putting our heads in the sand and decide to meet here every single year to listen to the same thing, or we face the problem head on and begin thinking and conversing about what we are doing wrong. It is up to you. That is why Colombia invites you all to participate in the dialogue that we are hosting tomorrow with the Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health. Whether you support its contents or whether you disagree, we need you there. Colombia has asked over and over again for a frank, evidence-based dialogue. The more we delay it, all the better for the transnational criminal organizations.
Now here's Swiss Ambassador Rafael Nageli.
First of all, Switzerland would like to thank the UNODC for the presentation of the 2024 World Drug Report. This edition of the World Drug Report contains a chapter dedicated to drug use and the right to health, towards an assessment framework, which was called for by 24 delegations from three different regional groups. In this regard, we welcome this first chapter dedicated to a human right in an edition of the World Drug Report, which adds to the landmark report of the OHCHR on the human rights challenges in addressing and countering all aspects of the world drug problem, as well as on the one on drug use, harm reduction, and the right to health by the Special Rapporteur on the right to health, Madame Darling Mofokeng from South Africa, who will also present it tomorrow here in Vienna. I would like to make some remarks on the World Drug Report and on the chapter in my national capacity. Switzerland welcomes the highlighting of the issue of stigma and of discrimination against people who use drugs as a major barrier to accessing healthcare services, as well as the importance to grant the same level of healthcare to people in prison in this chapter. As the World Drug Report highlights, almost 300 million people used drugs in 2023, an increase of 20% within a decade. The report also highlights the fact that the risk of acquiring HIV is 35 times higher for those who inject drugs than for those who do not inject, with about 1 in 8 people who inject drugs were living with HIV in 2022. Injecting drug use is also continues to be an important facilitating driver of the global epidemic of hepatitis C. According to WHO, 23% of new hepatitis C infections are attributable to unsafe drug injection. Overall, liver diseases attributed to hepatitis C account for more than half death attributed to the use of drugs. These are worrying figures that should incite us to rethink about our approaches to drugs. As the number of persons using drugs and getting infected by HIV/AIDS and hepatitis continue to rise, we should admit that the repression-centered approach to drug policy has failed and that a shift to a public health strategy is needed. This is why Switzerland believes that drug policy should be centered around public health and human rights. 30 years ago, Switzerland was confronted with a major heroin and HIV/AIDS epidemic. This was a national trauma. In order to address these issues, Switzerland has adopted a health-based approach and implemented different harm reduction measures, which dramatically reduced HIV and hepatitis infections. These measures worked, and the figures of infected people dropped massively. In the chapter of the right to health, we are wondering about the lack of references to the work of the OHCHR and the special rapporteurs, as well as the omission of the term harm reduction in the report. This terminology is frequently used by multiple UN entities, while the CND itself has shown broad support for this term at its 67th session earlier this year. The World Drug Report's chapter on the right to health stands especially in contrast to the Special Rapporteur's latest reports, which is the new UN's benchmark regarding harm reduction. As a conclusion, let me thank the UNODC for its work on this chapter and the 2024 edition of the World Drug Report. Thank you, Benjamin.
That was the Swiss ambassador, Rafael Nagelli. Before him, you heard the Colombian ambassador, Laura Gil. They were addressing the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs at an event entitled Powering Effective Drug Policies with Data Collection and Research, which was held June 26th in Vienna, Austria, to mark the release of the 2024 World Drug Report by the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please, support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying
for
so
the Drug
long.
Truth Network, so this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.